Now to a less frightening staple found in millions of American kitchens, white bread.
Sammy's mother sure likes Wonder Bread. It's so fresh. Always buy Wonder Bread. You'll be glad you did.
For most of the 20th century, Americans got between a quarter and a half of their daily calories from uniform loaves of factory-baked white bread. These loaves were symbols of an industrial food revolution that inspired national pride, a dough so emblematic of a successful democracy that the book White Bread, A Social History of the Store-Bought Loaf, was written not by a baker, but by a professor of politics. Aaron Bobrow Strain teaches at Whitman University in Washington. He also wrote about his own attempt to prepare the perfectly rectangular, cloud-like loaf in the Believer magazine. His book is now out on paperback, and we spoke to Aaron when it was first published about the deeply symbolic place of white bread in American identity.
I think there's really two pieces of that. One speaks to anxieties of the early 20th century. We're talking about the 1900s, the 1910s, about food purity. Is our food safe? And that gets mixed with racial anxieties about immigration at the early part of the 20th century. They're primarily the people who are baking bread in shops, so there's a lot of fears about contaminated bread. And the shining, modern, gleaming bakery factory becomes a way of resolving that anxiety. You know it's clean because it's untouched by human hands. That was the early slogan that bakers used.
Let's look at a watershed project in the evolution of white bread in America. You were talking about in the early part of the 20th century. Later on, the Rockford Project, which you call the Manhattan Project of Bread. What do you mean by that?
This project came about in the mid-50s. It was a multi-year, multi-experiment attempt to understand everything the government could about America's white bread habits and white bread tastes with the goal of engineering the perfect loaf of white bread. It was kind of like Mad Men meets mad scientist.
And after a couple of years of study, what emerged? Fluffier and sweeter. That's what people seem to want.
That's right. The final result, after almost 100,000 slices and thousands of families testing different formulas, was about 43% fluffier than the standard bread of the day and 250% sweeter.
So this is the loaf that you tried to replicate in where you were then living, a town in Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula. Mexico, of all places? How'd that happen?
Yeah, it's a long story. But I was living in Mexico trying to finish up the white bread book. I had been writing so much about industrial bread, and I'm a kind of geeky amateur baker. And, you know, is it possible to recreate this? I was pretty skeptical. It turned out that in my research, I had come across this set of instructions that came out of this Rockford project that you mentioned. And sure enough, it had very detailed instructions for how to produce the loaf of bread, which was called USDA White Pan Loaf Number 1.
Except for one missing ingredient that you were looking for.
Yeah, all of the ingredients were pretty standard household items, white flour, non-fat milk solids. But the final recipe was a very small percentage of yeast food. And yeah, exactly. What's a yeast food? I knew that kind of yeast ate sugars. I vaguely had that scientific idea, but I did a little research, and it turns out that yeast foods is actually a class of enzymes and salt. And the name's a little bit of a misnomer. They don't really feed yeast so much as they create an environment where yeast can eat faster, longer, and more effectively, achieving the cardinal goals of industrial baking, which is faster, higher, stronger loaves of bread.
Well, you find that there was a lot of energy spent on the process, of course, of making fermentation faster. And this idea of softness, which people seem to want psychologically, but not necessarily want to taste. This is where the strain comes. Factory white bread came to symbolize something much larger, right? It became a sort of barometer of which class you were from.
Absolutely. White bread, certainly in the very early part of the 20th century, was very much associated with class status and notions of responsibility. In the early 20th century, mothers in particular were getting lots of messages from experts, from the media, from medicine, that they had to make responsible choices about feeding their children. And if they didn't, they were a threat to the nation. They were a threat to their children and the nation. And one of those messages was, you have to pick the right bread.
And in the build-up to the war also, that it's a patriotic duty of every American to eat enriched white bread.
Right. That happens because at the end of the Depression, as the war is building up on the horizon, U.S. government experts were terrified because at that point, a lot of critics had been gaining traction. Critics of white bread had been gaining traction, really pointing out its nutritional lacks. And there was a strong sense among consumers in the 30s that maybe white bread isn't so great after all. War planners were really worried about this. There's this great set of exchanges where war planner experts are talking about how, well, the Russians eat rye bread and the Germans eat dark bread, but look at the French. They eat fluffy white bread and they fold it. What's going to happen to us? And so to save the country, presumably, and make it ready to fight, they decide to synthetically enrich bread, add synthetic vitamins to bread, which is a great, fairly democratic way to get vitamins to every single American at almost every meal at a time when, because of the Depression, the country was living a nutritional nightmare.
It's such a fascinating book, and of course the subtitle is A Social History. So what are we really talking about when we're talking about the ongoing ups and downs of white bread? I mean, we're told, oh, you shouldn't be eating this stuff. You have a terrific quote, is it from Diana Vreeland, editor of Vogue, who says, you know, what does she say? I'm sorry.
She says, people who eat white bread have no dreams.
Exactly. So why does white bread, how does it come to symbolize so much about either a thwarted self or an ambitious American self?
Yeah, I think that a big part of it has to do with the efforts of well-meaning food reformers. In many ways, this is a book about bread, but it's also really a book about all the food gurus and diet experts and government officials and ordinary folks who thought that, you know, if they could just get Americans to choose the right bread or avoid the wrong bread, it would somehow save the nation. And I think what I learned in the end was that when food reformers focus so much on individual food choices as a way to change the world, they tend to miss the root causes of what's really going on. What are the problems in our food system?
Aaron Bobrow-Strain, professor of politics at Whitman University, also author of White Bread, A Social History of the Store-Bought Loaf. It's now out in paperback. You can find more on the book, including a link to his piece about trying to recreate a factory loaf of white bread at wordofmouthradio.org.